The Culinary Institute of America held its 2014 Worlds of Flavor Conference at their Greystone campus in St. Helena, California. 70 chefs and presenters and over 700 attendees came together for Kitchens Connected on how creativity, millennial appetites, and culinary science are furthering the field of food. Matt Wilkinson, Pope Joan, Hams and Bacon, Melbourne, Australia. Where are you from?
Originally from Yorkshire, England, but my restaurant and produce store is in Melbourne called Pope Joan and Hams and Bacon.
So let's start from the beginning. Born and raised in England, what kind of cuisine were you exposed to?
I was actually brought up in a pub, so classic English pub grub. My from north of England as well, so it wasn't that flash. Most things were put like fish and chips, mushy peas, lots of pies, obviously Yorkshire puddings, lots of roasts. Generally what we cooked on Friday was always the day for the fish and chip shop, because Fridays, church thing I guess. And then Saturday was always bacon and egg sandwich day with tomato soup, like tin tomato soup. And then Sunday was a full roast, and that was really always delicious. And then Monday, Tuesday was the leftovers of the roast. And then Wednesday or Thursday was usually shepherd's pie. And we usually ate out once, then go down to the pub.
Yeah. And what did you eat when you went out?
I was actually lucky. Like we got exposed to really nice French and Italian food. Mum and Dad, when they did go out, so it was always Italian-style food, frog's legs, snails. I always loved eating those in both the Italian and the French restaurants. Indian as well. There's amazing Indian restaurants in Yorkshire. Terrible Chinese restaurants. The actual Chinese restaurant next door to the pub, which we used to get Chinese from, didn't serve rice. It was served with fried chips. But you couldn't get rice. And like when I was back home last year, I was like, I've got to take my wife here to see this. You will not believe it. And it's everything's sweet and sour, and everything's with fried chips.
Yeah. And so you were exposed to a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you weren't. What is your heritage? Is it English? 100%?
Yeah, 100% Yorkshire. I think it's. Well, my son that's just been born, he's 19th generation. So there's a Thomas. All our middle names are Thomas Wilkinson. So he's like 90th generation. So. I don't know, what's that?
Yeah.
What's that? I don't know. 1600 years?
That's a lot of years.
That's a lot of banoffee pie. That's a lot of
banoffee pie. So let's skip forward to what you said. You were 16, first dish you ever cooked for yourself. Tell me about it.
So I left school early. You're allowed to leave when you're 15 in England. And I went and worked in the pubs. And I actually didn't want to cook. Cooking didn't really appeal to me. I wanted to be like one of the youngest landlords. Realising though I'd just turned 16, I had to wait another 2 years to get my liquor licence, to be 18 to get it. I had to do something, so I went down to a friend of a friend's son was a sous chef in London. So I went down, did a trial, and they offered me the job straight away. So I moved from Yorkshire to London at 16, and straight into the kitchen. It was like one of the top, it was called Warren House. It was a Henry VIII's old Tudor getaway where he used to keep his doll birds. amazing grounds, and yeah, got exposed to this food straight away. That was, you know, Michelin star, and was crazy. And the first dish that I ever made was a banoffee pie, which I don't know if you know. It's basically, it's a tartlet shell, and in there it's then like a banana mousse, a banana cream, sliced bananas, caramel sauce, and then piped meringue over the top, and brulee. So, current day, I've put a dessert on that's on the Pope Joan nighttime menu. That's my version of banoffee pie. I'm terrible at making tarts, so I hate the word deconstructed as well. So it's kind of like it's a lazy man's banoffee pie, which just consists of a peanut butter, Milo, and chocolate chip cookie base that's crumbled, a fromage blanc and banana mousse, caramel sauce, bananas that I've diced up and then put through strawberry balsamic. And the reason for that is because it's so rich that it needs some acid, or else you know, you need to sit down for a week after it, and then the meringue on the top, that's brûlée.
So let's not use the word deconstructed, but reconstructed.
Reconstructed.
No, this is something that you did when you were 16 and you do now.
Yeah.
And I want to ask your age. What other foods have you reconstructed from your youth?
Quail Kiev, so taking chicken Kiev. Again, when I first started cooking, you know, I got paid bugger all, like fuck all. We did 6 days, I did about 100 hours, 102 hours for the first 4 years of my life. And only one night off, and, two nights off, and always that first night you went out and got absolutely smashed. And then the second night, it was like, what do you do? So it was either pizza, which you bought in, or I just went and bought the chicken Kiev from the butcher, tin potatoes, frozen peas, and that was like a staple for like 4 years. And I brought that back, but in the form of a quail, so a confit garlic butter piped inside the quail, and the crumb is a golden spice, which is instead of using breadcrumbs, it's chickpea flour, so besan flour with turmeric, ginger, ground cumin, ground coriander seeds, ground peppercorns, and it's kind of like crusty. Yeah, that's my quail Kiev. Well, I just serve with a coleslaw.
You know, there are two types of food I think that are served in restaurants, ones that do comfort food,
yeah,
which is kind of everyday food, and ones that do festive food, which is special occasions, birthdays.
Yeah.
Yours is kind of that in between. It's because it's an exciting time of the day to be eating that food,
yeah,
whenever you eat it, whether or not it's getting off of work or,
yeah,
you know, finding $20 on the street.
Yeah.
There's something that pairs with that food. What is that excitement that you have?
Pope Joan daytime, I call it daytime nighttime. Have you seen that, whether it's on air or not, but have you seen that thing on YouTube where that's Richard Attenborough thing, but someone's gone over it and it's a bird going daytime. Well, I was struggling with, because we rebranded Pope Joan, it was always called Pope Joan, but we, you know, restyled it because we're going to open night times. It was already a bar, we'll do a restaurant as well then. Now we're trying to find a building, and you know, it's like more rent, so what do we do? It's like, oh, we'll just do it where we've already got the place and we'll just buy next door instead and put a produce store there, hams and bacon. And when that happened, it was like, daytime menu is, you know, it's breakfast, it's sandwiches and salads, and that till 4:30, and then at 4:30 it's nighttime. I'm just like, well, I'm just gonna cook the food that I love to eat, and that's what my wife said to me like years ago, and that's why I just started. I was just trying to do the fancy stuff, and it just wasn't in me. I don't know whether I wasn't good enough to do it, or I don't think good enough. I just didn't want to do it. It wasn't clicking, so I changed to this. Well, I'm just going to cook the food that I want to eat myself. And basically, that's, you come to the restaurant at night time, it's like, if you're going to eat at my house, this is what we're going to have. So there's, you know, some fun pastas on there, some quail Kievs, there's the banoffee pie, but then there's a load of snacks, and then there's a load of salads. So me and my business partner, we're just like, well, we want to make a restaurant at a place that if we were at a day off, we want to go to. And I think when you have that self-belief, and no one's worried about, like, the staff are amazing and they're relaxed, and I want them to be themselves as well. So it creates this funness in food, I think. And, you know, life's too short to be too straight and down the line. And so it's not that I'm loose. It's more like it's just really tasty, fun food.
Talk about the original concept of Pope Joan, because you said it wasn't supposed to be what it is now.
Yeah.
What was it?
It was supposed to just be a cafe, and it's you know, we only ever expected to do 90 covers. We only expected to get to like $12,000-$13,000 a week revenue, and it just turned into this monster. Like, it was busy from day dot. The first day we opened the doors, and we'd always taken two buildings, of 77 and 79. And 79 is the entrance to the cafe. And we were fortunate to have enough, we made enough money to like then do 77. And so we did it into a bar, but we never really wanted to use it as the cafe. But we just kept on getting busier, so the bar then ended up using as a cafe. We've got a big outdoor area as well. And all of a sudden, this 90-seater has turned into a 175-seater, where we do, during the day, like Monday to Sunday, we do like 3,500 covers, plus about 500 at night times. And so it's just this monster that's grown. And when we did it, Ben and I, we were... Ben wanted to open his own business, and I was working in fine dining place, Circa, and we'd just gone through a format change. It was kind of like refined dining, like casual fine dining. And I've been doing that for about 3 years, and you know, getting really good feedback, and the press loved it. And Ben said he wanted to open a cafe, so like, well, let's open one. But these are the things, like coffee is huge in Melbourne, like, and it's awesome coffee, but it's so... Every one that we went to, they're just so rude and arrogant, and the food was shit. Like, I'm gonna be honest, it's not gonna get played in Australia, so I don't care. And even if it did, fuck them. The food was shit. There's all these operators that, anyway. So we came in and put, and there's a real trend for it now in Australia. I'm not saying that started the trend, but I think people saw that there is money to be made there. It's harder work. You've got to turn over a lot more. But it was basically fine dining chefs coming into casual. Market, especially cafes. So we just wanted it to be, simple and nice and British twist. So there's lots of haggis and black pudding and lots of smoking. Everything's with eggs. I can remember when we first opened, this lady's like, "You've got too many eggs on your breakfast menu." I was like, "Lady, fuck off down the road to somewhere else." Like, don't, like, I sometimes hate people. It's like everyone's got an opinion. And that's fine. I'm opinionated as well. But don't tell me what you're thinking. Don't tell me what you think my business should be. Just go somewhere else. Don't say anything. Like, well, there's plenty of places that don't do it with eggs. To me, breakfast is with eggs.
Well, it's disrespecting somebody's home in the way that you're speaking about your business. And your food, too. It's inviting someone into your home. So how do you treat somebody like they're in your house?
Well, how do I? Well, the thing is, just everyone's got so opinionated about food. I don't know whether it's because it's globally the internet or because of chefs on TV, and that people are then watching it and having opinions, and that's okay to have opinions. Like, be opinionated, but don't be rude about it. Like, or keep your opinions to yourself.
Yeah.
And we get it so many times. I'm not allowed to speak to customers anymore. Like, our general manager speaks to them, or Ben goes and speaks to them, because I just tell them what, like, I'm not rude to them, but it's like I'm direct, going, if you don't like what we do, fine, that's cool, but we're doing something right, because there's still 3,500 people coming through and I still like eating it. So please go somewhere else. We thank you for your custom, and we're sorry we didn't meet your expectations, but fuck off.
Well, I mean, let's talk about constructive criticism too, and feedback, because you're in a forum right now with some of the top chefs in the world.
Yeah.
How are you picking their brains? How are you letting them critique your dish?
I think it's one of those things, like, I did something at Bar Tartine and on Tuesday, and doing something with Courtney, the chef from there. And I think it's not about critiquing, it's about constructive feedback, whether it was awesome and why it was awesome. And then that sparked, to me, when you start talking about things like that, or like, say, that potato was awesome, how do you do it? It's like, then it starts your interest to how you can personally maybe be able to change one of your dishes already, or take that idea and, obviously never copy it, but you need imagination and inspiration needs to be sparked from somewhere. And I think you only get it from talking to people. So I don't think anyone would critique it. Probably a lot of people do it in their heads and don't say it. Unless you're Ed Lee, and he'll probably just tell you that shit. But they, I don't think. I'm sure the Japanese chefs look at me going, "Who's this non-chef jacket wearing guy with long hair messing around in the kitchen?"
Yeah, but I mean, that's a visual criticism.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, the visceral. And tasting that smoked potato, let's use that as an example.
Yeah.
What did you think about that dish, and what did you take away as far as new ideas?
Well, straight away, technique. And in one potato, there was so much flavour packed into it, you know, and it wasn't just the technique, it was the different sauces that come with it. It was really amazing. And so I've taken away from that she, Courtney does a black garlic sauce, right? And she's been so open with saying how it happened. I was like, oh, can I use that on a couple of things? Not on potatoes, but that black garlic sauce, I think it's going to be amazing on little bits of fish with grilled leeks, you know? So that's how I saw it. I broke it down. Blaine Wetzel from Lumiere Island, what's it called, the restaurant? He was next door to me making this amazing... Just then, and did you try it, the crab?
No.
Crab and seaweed broth, right? And he's not happy about how it looked, and I was just like, man, it's probably not, like, it is one of the tastiest things I've eaten. Like, forget how it looks, right? You know, a bowl of pho doesn't look like anything. It's got sliced meat in it, it's got noodles, and, you know, Vietnamese mint, and you add some chili sauce, but it's all in the broth. Forget the look. Like, but it was really delicious. Like he was then telling me how he makes the crab broth, and it's kind of like making a chowder, but he does it over a double boiler, and it's about using the right crabs and having the right amount of dashi in there. And that sharing of information was awesome. As he ate my gougère and went, I love the intense smokiness of it, but have you worked at the French Laundry? I was like, nah, but it's the French Laundry's recipe. I'm not going to say it's not. It's what I use as the bar snacks, but it's different from what the French Laundry does, because I put a hole in it. Well, I had a couple of extra eggs, put a hole in it and pipe it with a smoked tomato cream. And we do that all the time. We change the cream on that gougère. Gougères are on all the time. We change the gougère to whatever's in season. You know, it could be burnt eggplant, parmesan custard used from the parmesan rinds. You know, food's always been done before. Unless it's molecular, it's always been done before. It's just people's interpretations of it. But going back to, you know, criticism, I haven't seen anything, really. I actually don't think anyone would. It's more the guests that are, mm-hmm. that would do it. This one lady said, oh, that smoke plate, so what does it eat like? I'm like, fly to Melbourne, find out. But for me... it needs bread. It is intense. If you don't like smoked goods, you ain't gonna like it, because it's everything on there is smoked. As the carrot dish as well, another lady last night, she's like, I love what you did with that carrot top salsa, but where you dress the carrots in it, just dip it. I was like, that's actually not a bad idea, love. Why don't I make a carrot top? So I'm gonna go away. And this is just a paying customer, you know, that's been here. I'm going to go and go, all right, well, I don't quite like how I cook the carrots for the new dish anyway. Like, it's too much inconsistency. So I'll change the way I cook them back to an older way, but you still use that top sauce. Okay, perfect.
Looks like a bad bone to Melbourne. How does your food differ when you travel and do an event like this versus cooking at your restaurant?
I think the hardest thing is just, you know, produce. I use all farmers that are, not all of them are certified, but it's all biodynamic or organic. Even though there's amazing produce here, I'm very fortunate because I work with a lot of small growers. Obviously, it's a different season. The microclimate's very similar to Australia in California, but I think it's more like New South Wales. Than Victoria. One of the big differences is the cream. Like, the pouring cream here, we've got, like, our cream's quite thick. Even the milk, the cheeses, you know, they're all slightly, that dairy element, there's little touches. But when you do come to an event, I think you've got to set yourself on a percentage of how happy you're going to be. But you're also, I'm not just presenting for Pope Joan and Hamza Begum, I'm actually for Victoria as well and Australia. So if someone comes away saying, I really enjoyed that, you know, I've represented Australia well. So you just, be smart on the dishes that you choose. Choose the ones that are going to be in season here, so you don't have to find crap ingredients. And just do the best you can, really.
So let's talk about cream. You come here and the cream's not the right texture. You use texture modification. Do you change things to make them like the ingredients you have in Melbourne, or do you interpret the ingredients you have?
So, for example, it's about changing the recipe. Like for the smoked cream, our goat's curd is like you can quenelle it perfect, like an ice cream. As this one was like rock hard, so I had to smash it up, need to add cream to it to break it down. But then the cream that they use in the pastry department is like pouring cream, because ours is quite thick. Ours has got gelatin in it. But it's so how the mousse set was like set really, really hard. So it actually needed more cream, and I had to actually whip the cream first, rather than normally it's poured, you infuse, and fold. So it was just techniques and changing, like adapting the recipe. So that's the one thing. If you do travel outside of home and recipes that always, you know, work, don't go straight into doing them. Just do them once. Try it, test it, and if it's right, then you follow it, because when you are out of your comfort zone, as in your hometown, just make sure you definitely test it and don't go, oh, I made it, and then we'll go with it.
Talk a little more about travel, because we were just talking about Japan. You've been there five times. Where else do you travel around the world for inspiration?
Always to the US, either LA or San Fran, because it's stopover route. Always New York. Recently been going to Italy a lot, even though I'm originally from England, and I didn't really travel. You know, I went all around France, and I've been to every Spanish island, but not just mainland Spain. But Italy, we're planning to go to Turkey and to Tunisia and to Morocco next year, my wife. And Singapore a lot.
Yeah. Is it about specific ingredients, restaurants? Why do you travel?
For me, it's flavors. Where am I in my life? The reason I never went to Italy, I was trained French cookery. So on Spain, like, I just wanted to travel all around France. So that's why I just went to France. But now I've done that bit. You know, I know French cooking. I want to experience all these things of Italy and all these things of Morocco, all these different spices. So it's flavour that where I want to go to true, and it might be something that you get inspiration from. Like my wife really wants to go to South America. She's met a guy actually here who's from Venezuela, who gave me these tonka beans. And he's like, well, he's, you know, give me his card, come stay, we'll look after you, make sure you go around the rainforest. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to be able to get these into Australia, and if I do, I'm going to get a huge fine. However, it'd be lovely to try and get him to fly me some out and start using them. They came in a little bit, but then everyone stopped using them. And that's, you know, travel opens your eyes. I think travel and talking to people, it doesn't even have to be a conference like this. It could be like street food in Vietnam or Thailand. It should be able to spark, food should be able to spark inspiration and creativity. And because it's about the flavours of those areas. Like, I got a lot when I went to Cambodia. I got so much from Cambodia. Like, I cooked a lot of Chinese food at home now at night times, because I'm really shit at cooking Chinese food. So I want to practice. I think I'm awesome at cooking Indian food. I'm actually even thinking about, I've got a kitchen hand, I had a kitchen hand who I sponsored, who's now a chef. He's been working for me for 3.5 years, and I'm like, let's just open up an Indian takeaway shop together in Melbourne. So we're on it's actually 150 metres away. I've made an offer, and I said, when I come back, and he's called Pradyop Singh, and the Indian shop's called Mr. Singh's. And we're not going to, the idea is not to do anything to it. Just go in, we put a couple of dishes like chicken Kiev and fish and chips on there, but the rest of the menu is Indian. And no burger, no steak sandwich. because I do love eating a lot of Indian food, there's a real layer of flavour. So, you know, I've visited India to work on those things. Where else have I visited for... When I travel to America, it's usually for research for an idea that I have in my head. And I just want to, like, kind of finalise it. It's not... most of it's not for food. It's, like, look, feel... those little niche things that helps. I was supposed to open a business called Hen and Cop last year, which is the way I ended up doing Pojo nighttime dinners. I just pulled out just purely financially, but all the research that I did for that then went into Pojo nighttime. And, you know, it's just little things, you know, like the knives that we use, the bread that we're going to do, like why we want to serve butter when we can just, you know, vegetable dips, so it's cost absolutely bugger all. Or and I'm not and when I was in Scandinavia last year as well, I came back and I sacked the my bread maker and went with three different bread makers, which I've narrowed now down to two, and started making bread at night time myself, because I ate this amazing rye bread and pumpernickel breads in Scandinavia, and it was like, these shit all over mine. I've got to find a new... That's the one thing, you know. It's one thing that's about my business, because it's, you know, toast, breakfast, sandwiches, is bread. And worked with the baker to get what I actually wanted in the end. So that, you know, that was one thing that's why I think travel's so important.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.